access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
Good Saturday morning to you. Hope you are getting set for what is no doubt going to be, at least hopefully, a fantastic day in the city of Chicago. Welcome on into White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Mellor, where each and every Saturday, even during the offseason, we get you caught up on what is happening with your favorite baseball team, the Chicago White Sox. And of course, I'm sure you're well aware, as a listener, an avid listener of ESPN 1000 and ESPN Chicago, we are also your home of the Chicago Bears. And so while I'm going to roll up my sleeves and get into some White Sox talk over the next hour, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the full-blown Bears coverage day we have in store for you on your home of the Chicago Bears and the home of the Chicago White Sox. Because in case you were unaware, the Bears and the Packers will be meeting for the 213th time in the organization's steep histories, and it will be only the third time that they square off in the playoffs. So it is indeed going to be a special day here on ESPN 1000 and ESPN Chicago. And of course, we're going to get you all your White Sox convo in the next hour after we're done here at 9 o'clock. Chicago's college tailgate, Shea Norling and Tyler Aki, we'll react a little bit to the college football playoff, and then it all begins at 11 o'clock, folks. We've got Hood and Carm's Bears Bonanza, 11-1. 1-3, Tyler and Shea's playoff spectacular. 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock, I will be back on this airwaves, and it's a little bit of a switch-up because normally you'll hear me breaking down the Bears post-game. But today, it's going to be the pregame tailgate party, as I'll be on with Pat the Designer and Jason McKee. We'll be taking you up to our Bears Network pregame show, which starts at 5 o'clock. And then, of course, 7 o'clock, the main event, Bears and Packers. Jeff Joniak, Tom Thayer, Jason McKee on the call of that game. And then after the game wraps up, it will be the Great Clips Bears Network postgame show with Peggy and Yurko into the wee hours of the early morning hours on Sunday. So it's going to be a full day of Bears coverage for Bears and Packers after we get things wrapped up here on White Sox Weekly. So don't worry. We got you covered all day long for what is no doubt going to be a very memorable day in Chicago sports history. Speaking of history, the White Sox made a move, and this one's probably not going to go down in history, but we should always keep you apprised of what's going on inside the White Sox organization. I usually start you off with all the notable news. The White Sox claimed Drew Romo off of waivers from the Mets, and they designated Ben Collins for assignment. So Drew Romo was added to the 40-man roster, and then to make room, obviously, Ben Collins was the corresponding move. Romo's 24. He spent the 2025 season in the Rockies organization, where he batted .258 with a .323 on base and a .394 slug, 7 home runs and 24 RBIs in 65 games between AAA Albuquerque and the Arizona Complex Rockies, where he was recovering from an injury that he suffered early in the season. And then he finally made his way back to AAA. Romo's 6'1", 205 pounds. He's a catcher. He was claimed off of waivers by the Orioles back on December 5th, and then the Mets subsequently claimed him on December 17th, and then the White Sox on Thursday of this week claimed him. So it's been a busy 3 to 4 weeks for Drew Romo, as he's now a member of the White Sox organization. So there you go. The White Sox add Drew Romo to the 40-man roster. We will let you hear from a couple of members of the White Sox organization here in White Sox Weekly coming up, including the skipper, Will Venable, who met with the assembled media earlier this week. And Will, it was his first opportunity to meet with the media since the White Sox have added Murakami to the roster. So you'll hear Will's thoughts on being able to add the lefty slugger to the roster. Will also talked about pushing some of the younger players to take the next step in their Major League Baseball career. Guys like Kyle Teal, Colson Montgomery, Chase Meidroth, all players that Will Venable mentioned by name. He'll talk about Sean Newcomb's role, the newest pitcher that the White Sox added via free agency. And Sean Newcomb, according to Will Venable, is going to be competing for a rotation spot. And that, I think, is not really a huge surprise, but you'll hear the White Sox manager expand on Sean Newcomb, the veteran who the White Sox added here recently, and just what he will mean to the White Sox pitching staff. And then also, Will Venable addressed some of the other offseason moves the White Sox have made since he last spoke. And speaking of Sean Newcomb, he also met with the media and had a lot of interesting things to say about why he chose the White Sox. He's from the Boston area, so Mike Vassell, Shane Smith, Sean Burke, all players who we talked about quite frequently being from the Massachusetts area last season. Sean Newcomb referenced how them being members of the White Sox organization was appealing to him. He actually works in the offseason with both Mike Vassell and Shane Smith, so he had a relationship with them, and so I think that made this an appealing organization when he became a free agent. So Sean Newcomb could be a member of the White Sox starting rotation. The lefty had a very solid year last year, primarily as a reliever. Sean Newcomb was 2-5 with a 2.73 ERA. In 48 games, he logged 92 and a third innings pitched, and he struck out 91 hitters. So the lefty's going to offer some versatility to the White Sox, but from the outset, it looks like they're going to lean into giving him a shot to be a member of the starting rotation. Sean Newcomb also had a overlapping with Brian Bannister, who is the White Sox director of pitching, when Sean Newcomb was a member of the Giants organization briefly before he was moved on and traded to the Athletics. Newcomb pitched with the Giants in the minors for a bit, and that's where he references it. You'll hear it. Brian Bannister, I think, really helped him unlock some stuff with some of his grips. So in addition to working out with Mike Vassell and Shane Smith in the offseason, the fact that Sean Newcomb had some interactions with Brian Bannister and they seemed to be so effective, that was another reason why I think Sean Newcomb was happy to come back to Chicago, where he did play briefly back in 2022 as a member of the Cubs for a short stint. So lots to like when you listen to Sean Newcomb here, which again, I'll bring you here coming up next, but really was happy to hear him talk about the White Sox organization and why they were appealing to him. And that's, you know, when I get back to looking at the season that the White Sox had, I keep going back to they improved by almost 20 wins, right? That was a huge step forward. And then in addition to that, when you're hearing what they're doing in terms of infrastructure inside the organization, what you're seeing being done by Brian Bannister, by Ryan Fuller, you know, there's just a lot to like. The internationally, what they've been able to achieve, you know, with the signing of Murakami, there's a lot moving in the right direction under the leadership of Chris Getz. So it's just, the more you hear anecdotes like this, the more excited I get about the White Sox turning this around and moving it in the proper direction. So you'll hear a little bit of that from Sean Newcomb. And then later, when we're wrapping up the show, as we always do, we keep you abreast of what's going on around the majors. And the commissioner, Rob Manfred, spoke earlier this week and had some interesting thoughts on expansion and realignment, which does affect the White Sox directly, at least in terms of his vision for expansion and realignment. So I want to bring that to you as well when we wrap it up here on White Sox Weekly. So up next, we will let you hear from the newest member of the White Sox, at least the newest pitcher of the White Sox, that is Sean Newcomb. Sox Fest Live returns to the Romova Theater, presented by Rates, Blue Moon, and Wintrust. Celebrate the start of the season with music, entertainment, and insider conversations with members of the 2026 Clubhouse on Saturday, January 31st. For more information and to secure your tickets, visit whitesox.com/SoxFestLive. I'm Jeff Meller here on a big Saturday in the city of Chicago, getting you ready for, of course, Bears and Packers, but with plenty of White Sox conversation to come as well. on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
White Sox fans, get access to the best seats at the best value and lock in a 2026 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, April 2nd. Plus, enjoy flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2026. I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. On a big Saturday here in the city of Chicago, we've also got Bears and Packers for you, the playoff edition coming your way. So, Bears fans, don't worry. We've got you covered all day long here on your home of the Bears and White Sox, ESPN 1000. As I mentioned at the start of the show today, Sean Newcomb, the newest member of the White Sox pitching staff, he was signed to a one-year, $4.5 million deal earlier this winter. Met with the media earlier this week, and the 6'5 lefty talked about why the White Sox were appealing to him.
I mean, I was just looking for a good opportunity to, get the ball as much as possible, eat up innings. Yeah, that was really the main goal. Also, on top of it, just really like Chicago, the city. I played a little bit of 22 with the Cubs and just kind of like the feel around the city and kind of used to the weather with the cold at the beginning end of the season, so it was just seemed like a good fit all around.
What was your conversations like? Have you been able to talk to Will Venable yet?
Yeah, I talked to him yesterday, actually. Just kind of same message, like he's just looking for some good quality innings to be eaten up, and I'll kind of be one of the older guys on the staff at least, just kind of coming in and being one of those kind of presences for the younger guys, and pretty familiar with some of them too. A few of them are from the area that I'm from up near Boston, so it was I was familiar with those dudes, and yeah, it was good just touching base with him yesterday.
You mentioned eating innings. Obviously, you've started before and you've relieved before. You're doing a bit more, you know, late innings down the stretch last year. How are you kind of approaching the season about, you know, what different roles you could fill, and, you know, does it, you know, alter your preparation a little bit, you know, anticipating being stretched out a little bit?
Not totally. I've always kind of been the starter mentality, and I've over the past few years up in the big leagues, I've done a lot out of the pen, but even those outings, I've had a lot of like 3-4 plus inning outings and all that kind of stuff, so it's kind of the same mentality for me, just being ready to attack the lineup once or twice, three times through if it kind of gets to that point with 5-6 innings, and yeah, just kind of taking that mentality, and also just starting to use all 6 pitches all the time kind of a deal, just versus kind of when I get stuck in the pen, 1-2 innings, it's more just kind of my top few weapons. So making sure I'm touching base on all 6, just kind of mixing them up, and just look at, like I said, just looking to use that to eat the innings up.
You had a lot of success using a sinker more last year. How did that kind of come about as being a real weapon for you, and how did it kind of fit into, you know, what you were already doing arsenal-wise?
It kind of came along, actually, in 23, I was working with Brian Bannister, who's on your guys' staff now, on the White Sox staff now. So that was another part of the appeal, was getting back working with him and pitch grip and stuff. But yeah, just kind of learn more about my arm slot, learn more about the way I throw the ball well, and to kind of fit the just that a different sinker grip kind of versus being four-seam curveball my whole you know, coming up through the minors and first few years in the big leagues, and it was just part of my adjustment, finding that sinker, and then with that I was able to find my newer slider. I think it gets labeled slurve a lot. I call it a sweeper just because it gets a lot of horizontal break, but I just, you know, generally a slider. So those two pitches have been huge for me.
It seems like over the years you've gotten a little bit, you know, lower and more farther out as, you know, sinker and sweeper. Has that really played into what you're doing slot wise now?
Yeah, exactly. So, like, down there, a little tiny bit lower, it's just where those two pitches really work well out of. And it was part of just adjusting to, you know, going 162 and going from, you know, spring in February all the way through to pitching in, you know, October there with Atlanta a little bit, and always trying to be available then. So just learning how my body worked and kind of that lower arm slot, using my rotational, like, strength and power and everything to, you know, deliver the pitch, you know, inning after inning. Just kind of, this is kind of where we settled in, where that was a good pitch for me, and my arsenal's kind of developed around that now.
Hey, John, just how would you kind of describe your 2025 season, and just what made you so effective, particularly there, I think, like, from late May on?
Yeah, I mean, I got a chance with the Red Sox in camp to go into camp and just, you know, earn a spot. Never mind, I ended up, you know, being in the rotation there coming out of camp just with their injuries and the way I was throwing the ball. I had a really good camp just, you know, being from around Boston, and that kind of added a little extra fuel to the fire for me to kind of prove myself to myself and then to, you know, people back home watching and everything. So it kind of all piled up in a good way and came out of camp, you know, made the rotation. I threw the ball pretty well. I had a couple of rough ones. I think one was actually in Chicago. Had a weird inning there where I gave up, I think, like a five spot. But I just kind of, like I said before, was just learning how to use all six pitches. I was using them different mixtures, well, against righties and lefties, and that was allowing me to get in, you know, getting through the four, five, six innings and doing it pretty strongly. And just kind of all that added together just built on my confidence, and that compounded. And when I got to back to the Athletics in Sacramento, they you know, I went straight to just the pen based off their needs, and I was able to kind of grab a hold of that. And I was also, I think I was one of the older guys in that pen at the time too, so that was another thing that was kind of cool, was being like that veteran presence and starting to kind of take that part on, which is definitely new for me. I feel like at 32, I still feel like young in the game, but then looking at the roster, I was like, wow, I'm probably going to be one of the older dudes once spring runs around, comes around.
And you mentioned that connection to so many of those guys from the Boston area. Have you had a chance to talk to any of those guys? And if so, just what have those conversations been like?
Yeah, I actually work out with Vassell and Shane Smith, so I was hitting them with a bunch of questions during the whole process. But yeah, they had nothing but good things to say. Obviously, the White Sox are one of those old school kind of historical, just good organizations. They kind of seem like they're on the climb right now with, you know, just as far as all the young guys, some of the changes they've made all the way around. So it kind of was a perfect storm. It's pretty similar to what I had done with Oakland being there. It was a spotty couple of years, and then I had a good year last year with them, but it was pretty similar as far as, you know, just kind of the, I guess, rebuild, or just the next wave of, you know, the prospects and everyone kind of coming into their own. So it's definitely something I like to be a part of. Like, obviously the goal is to go out there and win, but these dudes are all, it seems like, in their mid-20s, just getting going. So it's an important time for them and the organization. So it's definitely going to be fun to be a part of it.
Hey, Sean, you mentioned just the connection with Bannister. I'm just curious, just like, what was it like working with him? And what are you most excited about reconnecting with him with the White Sox?
It'll just be good to have, you know, just someone that you can, you know, you've had some success with. You know, I worked with them pretty briefly. I was like half a season with them, the minor league side over there with the Giants, before I had got traded to Oakland the first time. But yeah, we had a brief, like, I threw one bullpen with him. He touched base on like a few of my pitch grips, and I was like, all right, well, that's, you know, where they're moving the best, where I can control them the best. And I just kind of rode that through some success in 23, 24. I was dealing with the little recovery on some stuff, but then 25, I was still using, you know, the same grips and everything. And I was able to kind of just get, like, I kind of back what I was saying with the confidence and the being able to be attacking the zone and everything. Those pitches were just kind of giving me a bunch of success, and I just got confident with it. So it's going to be good to just have him in their back pocket to, if things are going different, you know, going sideways at some point, it's good to have that direct, you know, line to get things fixed quickly, probably mid game if I'm, you know, go through a few innings, need to fix a little grip up. So it'll be good to have those guys around.
Hey, Sean, you kind of touched on a little bit. We saw it a little with Martin Perez last year. When you're a veteran, and obviously, like you said, you're not that old, you're 32, but you're a veteran coming into a situation where a team is climbing, maybe not a prime contender yet. What is the mindset different, or is it still just get outs no matter what the situation?
No, I think, yeah, it's just get outs no matter the situation. Anyone, you know, I know that's easy to say, not a contender, just after past years, but like any team could flip the switch any year. You've seen it plenty of times. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of the approach to kind of simplify things, though, just getting outs no matter what, whether you're not, you know, whether you have a huge lead in division, whether or not, it's just better going out and keeping everything mentally just like even keel, whether it's, you know, no matter the position you're in. I kind of, when I got to Oakland last year, I think they were on like a 1-19 run. And that was kind of like, you know, either keep letting that get on you or you just show up one day and it changes. So, I mean, that's kind of just the mindset. You got to just kind of go one out at a time and regardless of the situation.
How essential has it been for your career to find pitching people who believe in spin rather than just straight out velocity? How much has that changed the game over the last 4 or 5 years to people like you to be able to find out the keys to a way to be able to get people out and still have that opportunity in the major leagues?
Yeah, it's huge. I think you see it a lot everywhere, not just like velocity based, but just like pitch usage based. You see tons of guys, you know, throwing huge percentages of their best off speed or best, you know, their first and second best off speed just as much as their best fastball. So that's just kind of where the analytics is taking the game. And like I said, it gives you confidence knowing just the numbers about, like, basically just telling you with a number how hard it is to see your pitch or square up your pitch. So, like, those kind of things, you know, it all plays into it the same way as if you were pumping upper 90s. And obviously, if you can do that with the good movement, that's what those elite-type guys. But, yeah, it's just another piece to kind of just put in your back pocket for confidence and know that you don't have to go out there and see the biggest possible number. It's more of the way, just the, you know, the way you're attacking the hitter and just kind of playing the game with them.
So there you go. White Sox lefty Sean Newcomb meeting the media earlier this week, talking about why he chose the White Sox this offseason. And I liked hearing about how Sean Newcomb is really open to the idea of potentially being a reliever who can just cover outs. And certainly any pitcher who will make it to the majors and has had a longer career like Sean Newcomb has would want to start. But I love the fact that the White Sox are going to give him that opportunity to compete, but also the fact that Newcomb, as a lefty who will be in his age 33 season when the season begins, he'll be open to just covering outs. That's kind of the modern day of baseball. You know, that's where we're at. You don't really have... I mean, you do have your five set starters, but the reality is it's going to take, you know, 8, 9, 10 guys to get you through a season at the majors at this point. And I think Sean Newcomb is going to be one of those guys who the White Sox will utilize in a starter role, and he very well could be a long reliever. He could be a situational reliever at times, but he has a lot of versatility. And I just love the fact that he's already got a relationship with Mike Vassell and Shane Smith, who I can tell you firsthand inside the clubhouse were, despite their age and despite the fact that they were Rule 5 picks last year, they both, by the end of the year, were veteran leaders in that clubhouse. And so Newcomb having a relationship with those guys, I think it's only going to be another positive inside the White Sox clubhouse as they look to make the next steps to build on what was a successful 2025 season. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly here on your home of the Sox, ESPN 1000. It wasn't just Sean Newcomb, though, who met with the media. White Sox manager Will Venable, who had a lot to go over since the last time he met with the media, met earlier this week as well. We'll bring you that coming up next right here on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Tonight, folks, it is going to be a good one on the lake, the city by the lake. That is because the Bears will be hosting the Green Bay Packers for just the third time, the two franchises squaring off in playoffs, despite the fact that it will be the 213th meeting in the history of the founding members of the National Football League, Bears and Packers. Cannot wait. I'm so excited for tonight, and I know you are as well. But first things first, we're also talking about the White Sox here on White Sox Weekly. So Again, though, full day of Bears coverage, which I will get you the whole schedule before we wrap up here if you missed it earlier. But we're talking White Sox right now before we get to that Bears coverage, and I cannot wait to talk about it with you. Neither can White Sox manager Will Venable, who met with the media earlier this week. It was his first opportunity to talk about the White Sox adding Muni Murakami. They added him, and also Will Venable revealed who on the White Sox roster may be, in addition to Murakami, may be competing in the World Baseball Classic. We got that little tidbit from the White Sox manager. Will also talked about Sean Newcomb, who you just heard from, the addition of him and what he brings in terms of a veteran presence, and also the other offseason moves by the White Sox. So if you missed any of it, this was Will Venable earlier this week with the White Sox media.
Yeah, very excited. Obviously, happened very fast. You know, certainly was the case on my end. I was, you know, talked after his press conference, but I was at, I was in New York doing some traveling with my family. I got a phone call from Getsy that there was some action and a heads up. And before I knew it, we had signed him. So happened really quickly on my end, but obviously very happy that it ended with us getting Muni, which we're really excited about.
What do you, I mean, have you talked to him much, and what do you kind of know about his skill set beyond what we kind of know that he's, you know, accomplished hitter, big star over in Japan there?
Yeah, you know, just the communication on the Zoom call with him before he signed, and then, you know, afterwards, just been exchanging texts through an interpreter. Obviously, he's very excited, but we've, you know, he talks a lot about defense. He talks a lot about competing. I know that he's just really excited to get going. Going to be a big spring for him coming over. Starting his debut in the States, also has the WBC. So a lot of good stuff going on for Muni. Excited for him.
I wonder if you can talk a little bit about your history, having lived in Japan, and also, you know, the work you did on your thesis about the cultural differences and comparisons to Japan and here, and how that might help you with, you know, dealing with a player of this magnitude.
Great research on my thesis there. You know, for me, my understanding of Japanese baseball, 2 years over there, two seasons where my dad played, I think the thing that stands out is the passion for the game. That's, you know, culturally, with the fans, the players, everything in that culture. You know, baseball has just got a huge, huge place in that country. And it comes out in the way that these guys go about their business, the way that they play on the field, the way that fans come and support them, the energy in the stadium. Stadiums, you know, similar to winter ball to me, in which every play is impactful, every play is important, and you get energy in these buildings, which is just awesome to be around. And so I have no doubt, and just again the little that I've heard from Muni and communicated with him, it seems very clear that you know, he's cut from that same cloth. He's very excited to go out there and play hard, to compete, and excited about what that looks like for him in the United States. You know, as far as, you know, my thesis or my experience in, you know, kind of taking a deeper dive into Japanese baseball, you know, I think it's just the commitment to the game and the their ability to just give everything to the game, and their willingness to do that. And certainly as, you know, a manager of players, we like that in all our players, for these guys to put baseball first and give everything they have. And I'm excited to see what that looks like for Muni.
We were just talking to Newcomb, and he talked about talking with you about, you know, his role just being to soak up innings. And, you know, obviously he's done both starting and relieving, and he's kind of been a swingman before too. Just what have you see what he can provide you, or how are you kind of approaching the spring of, you know, maybe finding out what he has this year and what role he'll fit into?
Yeah, well, number one, he kind of becomes an old guy overnight on our team. I think he's 32 years old, which is crazy to say he's the old guy, but he is one of our more veteran guys. He's also somebody that, as you mentioned, has experience pitching in different roles. And so you know, his flexibility is great. I think that his having been successful in different roles, he can help our players, which is something that, you know, we'll look to him to take that little bit of that role. But, you know, for him, you know, he is going to come in and compete for a starting job or a job in the starting rotation, I should say, which we're really excited about. We know that he had some success in both the starting role and the reliever role last year, and so he is capable of doing both. But you know, he is going to be in that mix for a starting rotation job, and really excited to help support him to go out and win it.
Hey, well, whether it be some of the pitching additions or a guy like a slugger like Mooney, just what have been some of the things that stood out to you overall about some of the offseason moves that the club has been able to make this offseason?
Yeah, I think that they're very thoughtful. You know, I think that you know, number one, these guys are guys that are young, physical, athletic guys that, you know, I don't think any manager is going to have a problem with that. I think, you know, you continue to add those types of bodies is great. But they also have a ton of upside, you know. You just see even someone like Anthony Kay, who, you know, had his stint here, goes over, you know, I think that there's upside there that, you know, we can tap into. Newcomb, obviously Mooney, you know, these guys, there's some real upside. And so, you know, obviously it'll be our job to create an environment and support them with everything we can to help them be at their best. But for me, I think the thing that really sticks out is just, you know, you got guys that have really high ceilings, and that's exciting.
And you mentioned Newcomb having that opportunity to compete for the starting job. Just how overall, how would you kind of assess, you know, how the rotation is sort of coming together as you get nearer and closer to spring training with all the options that you do have?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're going into this and certainly, you know, Anthony Kay, you know, Shane Smith, and, you know, you got guys who have accumulated a lot of starts at the major league level, and you anticipate being in the rotation. But I think it's great to have, you know, competition with these guys and understanding that, you know, there's a group of guys that have the capability of pitching bulk innings that we want to challenge to grab a starting rotation spot. And so really excited about, you know, creating some healthy competition amongst the guys and seeing who can go out and go grab it. And at the same time, knowing that, you know, we're going to have these guys be flexible and pitch in a number of different ways. And so I think it just helps us at the end of the day to have guys who are versatile and willing to go out there and do whatever it takes to win. But, you know, as far as like what the actual names in the rotation look like today, you know, we're obviously a long ways away from that and really want to have it be an open competition and have these guys go earn it.
Hey, Will, aside from Mooney, do you expect anyone else being involved in the World Baseball Classic during spring training?
I believe Kyle Teal may, but I'm not sure. I don't know if I yet have confirmation, but I'm pretty sure Kyle Teal is playing.
And, you know, we talked to you right before the holidays. You know, how is your feeling about this team different from even just, you know, the end of last season? I mean, in terms of going into 26 and the encouragement with what you have on the roster?
Yeah, very excited. You know, I think, you know, obviously these you know, young guys have to take a step forward. We have to continue to support these guys to be at their best. But we've added to this group, right? And we've added in ways that are very exciting, added in ways that could be very impactful. And so, you know, our group that we left with on its own last year, we were certainly happy with the progress they made, knowing that we have a lot of work to do. But you add some of these other pieces, you hear about the off season that these guys are having, talk to them and just hear about how much they've accomplished, talk to our medical group and our strength coaches and how proud they are of our players and talk to our players and how excited they are to get to camp and get going and the work that they've been doing. You know, it's just exciting. So really looking forward to getting there and seeing everybody. But, you know, I think, you know, there is a without having played any games, obviously, I think that there is, you know, a growth even over the off season that I think we can all point to and be excited about.
Well, there's a consensus these days that there's not real starting pitching depth on any team that doesn't have at least eight potential starters within their – their 40-man roster to be able to use at the big league level. Where do you stand on that type of philosophy and thought process as you enter another season where you know that pitching and progress isn't always linear for these guys?
Yeah, you can never have enough pitching is obviously the saying, and certainly having starting pitching depth is important, and I think we feel really good about the volume that we have, that we have a number of guys that can come in and pitch bulk innings for us and do it effectively. So I certainly agree that that's important, and I'm happy with where we're at with ours.
And we'll just think of Everson Pereira and Lenin Sosa. We're both playing in the Venezuelan Winter League at this point this offseason. Have you been in touch with them about what their situation is and how they're doing right now?
Yeah, we have. Everyone's good. All those guys are. And Wilkerman and Iriarte are down there, too. We've been in contact with all those guys. Everybody's doing good. Obviously very scary situation. The organization, not just myself, the organization has been really proactive in locating these guys, making sure that they're okay. It's been great to hear that everyone's doing okay.
Well, how was the thesis received at Princeton when you submitted it?
I think I got a B, Mark. So I'll take it. But a B at Princeton is like a C or D. They give out, I don't know. That was a harsh grade. I think a lot of people would have been upset with a B. I was pumped.
So there you go. White Sox skipper Will Venable on an array of topics earlier this week, including Kyle Teal potentially competing for, it'll be Team Italy. You probably just assumed it was Team USA, but apparently Kyle Teal in the mix to potentially play for Team Italy in the World Baseball Classic. Now, that has not been finalized, but it is something that is on the table. We do know that Muni Murakami will be competing for Japan in the World Baseball Classic. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. Hey, celebrate your special occasion in 2026 with a White Sox party area. Reserve your group outing today to get access to the best spaces and top matchups like opening day on April 2nd and other big matchups against the Cubs, Dodgers, Yankees. For more information, visit whitesox.com/groups or call 312-674-1000. I'm Jeff Meller. We're going to wrap up this edition of White Sox Weekly here today before we get into our full Bears coverage for the day. But when we do come back, I want to let you hear something that I found interesting from the commissioner of Major League Baseball. That is Rob Manfred. He spoke earlier this week. So we'll do that coming up next right here on ESPN 1000.
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider and get special offers, single game ticket presales, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. Jeff Meller wrapping up White Sox Weekly this week here on ESPN 1000. We're with you each and every Saturday, even during the offseason, getting you caught up on your favorite baseball team, the home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. And of course, we are the home of your favorite football team, the Chicago Bears. I will get to that here in a moment. But I did want to mention something that came across on Thursday of this week. Rob Manfred was the Major League Baseball commissioner, Rob Manfred. He was on in studio with WFAN in New York. And one comment in particular that piqued my interest was Rob Manfred discussing realignments and the potential of expansion, and I'll just let you hear it and then we'll react.
Yeah, so let's start with, first of all, I would like to expand. I think 32 would be good for us. And, fundamentally, it's a lot of cities like to have Major League Baseball. When people want your product, you ought to try to, find a way to sell it to them. It's kind of basic, number one. Number two, it does a ton of for us from a format perspective. You would realign. You would do it along geographic lines, which would could alleviate a ton of the travel burden that's on players. Remember, we ask our players 162 times in 186 days. So most of the play between 162 and 186 travel, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, so you can eliminate a lot of that travel, make it less burdensome, which would be a great thing in terms of player health and safety. And if you play geographically, we get in a postseason. You know, we have those four window days that I love, right? You get four baseball games in a day. It's awesome. But when you think about the fans in the individual markets, you always end up with, because of the way we're set up, you know, you get Boston versus Anaheim in one of the early rounds. So you're either going to be too late for the fans in Boston or too early. So if you realign geographically, you would look more like other sports where you play up east into the World Series and west into the World Series. And that 10 o'clock game on the West Coast that sometimes is a problem for us becomes a prime time game on the West Coast for the two teams that are playing. So there's a lot of advantages to it. I think if you did it, you'd probably be 8-4s, right? Okay. And I think you would try to keep the two team cities
separate.
You would.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
So they would not be in the same division.
Yeah. That would be my thinking. Now, a lot of water got to go over that dam.
So there you go. That was Rob Manfred. And in particular, my ears perked up when I heard him talk about how he'd like to keep two team cities in different leagues. Of course, he was on WFAN right there in New York, so their primary concern was the Yankees and Mets remaining in the American and National League. Of course, you've got the Angels and Dodgers in L.A., but what we're most concerned about here in Chicago is the Cubs and the White Sox, and I am so happy to hear Rob Manfred say that he would like to keep the White Sox and Cubs separate, because I, as a White Sox fan, absolutely am okay with the idea of realignment, but I would certainly like to keep the two teams separate. I don't want Cubs and White Sox going at it, you know, more than they already do each year. There's still a novelty to it, and if you put them in the same division, I do understand that it would ratchet it up even more because they would be competing theoretically for the same division title. But as a longtime White Sox fan, I don't want them playing in the same division personally. And so to hear Rob Manfred say that in his vision of expansion and realignment, which, as you heard, would contain four team divisions, I just would be much happier keeping the White Sox and Cubs separate. And then you would still have interleague play between the White Sox and Cubs, but I just don't need that in my life, is White Sox and Cubs in the same division. No, thank you. I've already got enough of rivalry games between the Bears and Packers, folks, which, again, we're going to get you locked in all day long. The main event starts at 7, obviously, Bears and Packers. We're the home of the White Sox and the Bears. You know that. So we'll have the Bears game starting at 7 o'clock. But don't go anywhere, because we're going to lead you up to it in fantastic fashion as only we can here on ESPN Chicago. After we're done here on White Sox Weekly, it's going to be a combo of Bears-Packers talk along with some college football breakdown. Of course, we have the national championship game set. So Shay and Tyler are going to talk about that and Bears-Packers in Chicago College Tailgates, which starts right after we're done here on White Sox Weekly. Then at 11 o'clock, we go into our full Bears coverage all day long, starting with Jonathan Hood and Carmen DeFalco from 11 to 1. 1 to 3, Tyler and Shay come back with their playoff spectacular, where they're only going to be talking Bears. Then at 3 o'clock, I will be back on these airwaves along with Pat the Designer and Jason McKee with your pregame tailgate party as we get you set for the 213th meeting between the Bears and Packers, but only the third time in playoffs. And then at 5 o'clock, our Bears Network pregame show coverage begins with the Advantage Dealer Group's Bears Network pregame show. That'll be Sylvie, Waddle, and Deion Miller live from Soldier Field at 7 o'clock, Bears and Packers. And then as soon as the game goes final, hopefully with a Bears win, it will be Peggy Kaczynski and Yurko giving you the Bears postgame show into the wee hours of the morning. And then after that, Sunday morning, Jack McGrath is going to be live and local talking about the Bears-Packers epic clash on the lakefront. Again, hopefully getting you set for the Bears hosting a divisional round game. That's what's on the line, and we've got it all for you right here on your home of the Bears and your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. That's going to do it for us here on White Sox Weekly. I want to say thank you, as always, to our fine executive producer of White Sox Baseball. That is Brendan Riley. I am Jeff Meller. Again, I will talk to you later today at 3 o'clock. But until then, enjoy plenty of Bears coverage right here on ESPN Chicago.